Welcome to Now, I'm David Byrd.
And I'm Manny Eck.
Today, we'll meet a young trumpeter who is setting the jazz world on fire.
Music can be your passion, it can be your work, it can be your living, it can be what you do, and it's fun.
Then Eric Felton will be by to talk about master guitarist Homero Lumbombo.
Could the next music star be on a new singing competition?
I think this is the first of that kind of reality television where people are going to be able to have their say as it's happening.
Curators here in Washington found a lost Picasso under one of his most famous paintings.
Controversy continues over an NFL team's mascot.
And there's a new movie that's a throwback to a simpler time.
That's all coming up on this Monday edition of Now.
At an age when most of his peers are thinking about video games or learning algebra, one young man is lighting up the jazz world.
When he was 5 years old, Jeff Galante was already playing with award-winning American musicians and appearing on TV's Tonight Show.
Now at 13, Galante is mesmerizing audiences with his talent.
VOA's Julie Tabo caught up with Jeff at a recent gig outside Washington.
At this historic music venue in a quaint little town in Maryland, a group of seasoned professional musicians has gathered to play jazz. But the big sound of the trumpet comes from the youngest person on stage. The star of the show, 13-year-old Jeff Galante. Jeff has been playing the trumpet since he was 4.
I was at my grandmother's house, I saw the trumpet, and I pretty much immediately fell in love with it.
Jeff started music lessons, and after just 1 year, was performing in all kinds of venues. He has played for trumpet king Maynard Ferguson and jammed with such music greats as Grammy-winning Phil Driscoll and jazz legend Wynton Marsalis. He even appeared on one of America's long-running TV programs, The Tonight Show with Jay Leno. All this before the tender age of 6. Today, at 13, he can't imagine doing anything else.
A big part of it in music is making other people happy, making other people enjoy it. Seeing the joy in their faces is really an amazing feeling.
Jeff's father, his biggest fan, is taking it a day at a time.
We don't want him to have to think that he needs to decide right now at 13 years old what he wants to do. We'll support him all the way, and if he decides that he wants to do something else, well, that's fine too.
But for right now, playing the trumpet is all Jeff wants to do. Sharing his love of music with musicians and singers like Sue Matthews.
To combine his age with his absolutely overabundance of talent and his very, very special gift, we're lucky. We're lucky, all of us here tonight, people that have heard him, people that have worked with him, to have an opportunity to see this. How often do you get that opportunity?
Music can be your passion, it can be your work, it can be your living, it can be what you do, and it's fun.
For this teenage prodigy, it looks like music will be all of those things for a long time to come. Julie Tabo, VOA News, Rock Hall, Maryland.
To see video of Jeff in action, log on to our webpage, www.voanews.com.
And if you want to comment on this story, go to our Facebook page, VOA Asia.
And be sure to follow us on Twitter, at Now VOA Show.
Brazil is hosting this year's World Cup, and if you've been watching any of the games, you've probably heard bossa nova music.
One of the modern greats of the uniquely Brazilian-style music is guitarist Homero Lumbombo.
VOA's Eric Felton caught up with Homero recently and joins us in the studio. Eric, welcome.
Thank you. How are you doing, David?
Oh, I'm great. I'm envying this guy's guitar stylings, though. This dude is a true master.
Oh, he's one of the greats. One of the great virtuosos of Brazilian jazz, guitarist Romero Lubambo. You know, people talk about in Latin jazz music that the Cubans are always the best piano players, the people from Puerto Rico are the best horn players, and the best guitar players all come from Brazil. And Romero Lubambo is one of the best that you'll ever find in Brazil, let alone anywhere else.
Now, Romero is of the school of bossa nova, which is a specific style, but he can play near about anything. I watched a video of him playing electric guitar with somebody else on the bandstand, and he was just flying. This guy is incredibly good.
Yeah, what's interesting, we had him on our show Beyond Category, where he performed live new music from his solo album, most recent record that he did. And one of the things we talked about was how he has been part of so many different types of music. He's been called to play with Wynton Marsalis, with Kathleen Battle, the opera singer, with Yo-Yo Ma, the classical cellist, and of course in lots of straight bossa nova contexts, as well as jazz and classical. And one of the things I asked him was, how do you adapt to all of these different styles of music? And he had a really interesting response, which is he said, even though you need to be aware of what's going on in all of the different kinds of music you might be a part of, that the reason someone would call him was they wanted him to be him. They wanted him to bring what he had to bring to the table. So he finds as a musician that though you try to be sympathetic to whatever context you're in, the most essential thing is to be yourself.
Mm. Now, you know, Romero also, I can tell from looking at him, I watched some of the videos because the audience might know I try to play guitar. I watched some of his videos online, and he's obviously classically trained. I mean, the guy is you know, just flying on these nylon string guitars, and his tone is just big and fat and round and full and, you know, sensuous kind of tone, and he makes it look like it's nothing.
Does he sing also?
He does not sing I didn't see him sing. He might sing. Mm-hmm. Does he sing too, Eric?
A little bit here and there.
Yeah.
But he does it more in the style of the bossa nova traditionalists who don't worry about having a lot of singing technique, but sing for the love of it.
Mm.
But his technique, certainly on guitar, is extraordinary. And what's interesting is that when he was in college, he did study classical guitar. But that wasn't what he was getting his degree in. He studied mechanical engineering.
Wow.
He talked about how when he was growing up in Brazil and his family, you were expected to be a doctor or a lawyer or a mechanical engineer.
Right, get a respectable job.
Something respectable.
But that's not where his heart is it?
No, it isn't. But you know what's one of the interesting things that he talked about mm-hmm. was that he was really glad he had studied mechanical engineering. I think he likes fast cars, and he likes to work on the cars and mm-hmm. make them fast. But I think also that he found that the kind of scientific and mathematical thinking that goes into mechanical engineering has come in handy to him as a musician. A lot of music is mathematics in the mm-hmm. relations mm-hmm. of chords and notes. And he found that having studied math and science, that it really brought something to his music that helped him understand the structure of the music, the underlying foundation, in the same way that somebody putting together a building and doing the engineering in that would have to understand the foundations and the architecture of the foundations.
Thank you, Eric. Thank you so much for talking to us. Thank you for having Romero and giving us the chance to enjoy some of his music.
Thanks. Look forward to coming back and talking with y'all soon.
Good to see you.
So, have you been watching the World Cup?
No, I haven't, but it's all
you haven't.
It's on, it's at my office. It's always on.
Oh, okay.
Because down in the news department, you know, you always hear, oh! You know, and then you're like, what?
What happened? Oh.
We hear that, too, upstairs.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I don't care.
I don't. Oh, well, fine.
I'm a girl.
I thought you would be like one of those girls that would watch for all the hot guys playing soccer.
I'm not that superficial.
Oh, yes. Let me step back. Let me get back here so when the lightning hits, I won't get cooked. Okay.
I'm actually, I mature past that.
Yeah, right. My mother was 60 years old. She didn't mature past that.
I'm all about personality, man.
Uh-huh. Manny, do you watch American Idol or The X Factor or The Voice or any of those shows?
I used to watch American Idols. I was a big fan of it, but I don't like it as much. I like The Voice now. I think they have more talented people on the show.
You know, there's a new singing competition show that combines the contest and social media.
Sounds interesting and interactive. Any famous judges on the show?
Well, it's called Rising Star, and it has a celebrity judge panel. Country music star Brad Paisley is there, rapper Ludacris, and pop rocker Kesha.
The show is also hosted by crooner Josh Groban and allows audience members to vote in real time for the acts that are performing.
Brad Paisley says the show offers audience members something they have never had before, the ability to vote for acts in real time.
I'm very excited. I think it's a really amazing concept. I think it's going to change TV forever once people see that they can actually in real time influence the way one of these shows go. I also think that you're going to see a process that is one of the best that's ever, I guess, been conceived as far as finding the next star.
Josh Groban says the show uses a smartphone application to allow the audience to vote for performers to stay or to go.
The fact that we now have that technology so that we don't need to wait until another episode to find out who won. We don't need to call, you know, call rates apply, wait on the phone. You're not going to get 100 anonymous people calling over and over and over and over again. Everybody has their vote on their app, and that vote is beaming instantly to that wall. I think it's, you know, when they say it's revolutionary, I don't think they're exaggerating. I think this is the first of that kind of reality television where people are going to be able to have their say as it's happening.
Kesha says that she's looking for the performers who have the special something that separates the true stars from the wannabes.
There's something about my favorite performers like Michael Jackson or Mick Jagger or Iggy Pop. And you just can't take your eyes off the person. They're magnetic and they're magical and they're like a unicorn. That's what I'm looking for. I don't really know what genre and I don't know what age. Like, there's nothing specific. I just want them to have that thing where you just can't take your eyes off of them.
Brad Paisley told the Associated Press the show might find the next country singing star like Carrie Underwood or Kelly Clarkson.
Well, we could use a few more female singers. That'd be good, you know, but I'm open to anything. It's going to be interesting to see if you get somebody up here that's really got their own voice and their own sort of style, whether that be as a songwriter or just bring something to it that's that little spark, that little something that is more than just somebody singing a song. They've got it, and that's what we're looking for.
I don't know if I'd like that. Real time?
I don't like it.
You don't like that?
I think it's stressful.
Well, I mean, it really would be stressful because you're up there and, you know, it's stressful enough performing in front of a live audience and all these
stars. And then you can't really fake your emotions either.
No, you can't.
Right? What if you get rejected and you're like,
yeah.
You're in shock.
Well, it's
you won't be intelligent about your emotion.
And the thing is, they have this app, you know, and your picture comes up on the app. And, you know, it's like swipe left for yes or swipe right for no. And it's just kind of like, and then, you know, it appears on this wall, this great big wall of all these screens. And it's kind of like, who's left? And you're like, and you look at that wall and your picture's not there. It's like, oh, gosh.
I think it's just a big rejection show.
Well, you know, it will probably become a hit. Rising Star premiered Sunday on the ABC television network.
So what do you think? Will you watch Rising Star?
What do you think of the idea of letting the audience vote acts on or off in real time?
Let us know your thoughts by logging on to our Facebook page, VOA Asia.
And be sure to follow us on Twitter at NowVOAShow. 'Cause all we got is right now. Here in Washington, scientists and art experts have found a hidden painting behind one of Pablo Picasso's masterpieces, The Blue Room.
Using inferred imagery and other high-tech devices, curators at the Phillips Collection in Washington found a portrait of an unknown bearded man behind the paint of the Blue Room.
Susan Frank is an associated curator at the Phillips Collection. She told the Associated Press that the find wouldn't have been possible just a few years ago.
In recent years, you know, there's been a greater interest in taking new technologies to understand that there's information about Picasso that we didn't know because he had covered it up.
The portrait has set off a hunt for the subject of the hidden painting.
The bearded man wears three rings on his fingers, and his face is resting on his hand.
Patricia Favero is a conservator at the Phillips Collection.
It's one of those moments that really makes what you do special. And then the second reaction was, well, who is it? And we're still working on answering that question.
Favero says that the painting was probably done in 1901 when Picasso was living in Paris at the start of his blue period.
He's 19. And he's really seems to be searching for a style, something that will help him stand out, really searching for something that is of him rather than being just always influenced by all these other artists.
Scholars are trying to find out the bearded man's identity. They have ruled out the image as a self-portrait.
So what do you think? Let us know your opinion by logging on to our Facebook page, VOA Asia.
And follow us on Twitter, at Now VOA Show.
Last week, the U.S. Patent and Trademark Office announced that it had canceled the trademark protection for the National Football League's Washington Redskins team.
The 99-page ruling said the registration had to be canceled because they were disparaging to Native Americans.
U.S. Senate Majority Leader Harry Reid said the ruling reflects a change that needs to happen.
This is extremely important to Native Americans all over the country that they no longer use this name. It's racist. Daniel Snyder says it's about tradition. I ask, what tradition? The tradition of racism is all that name leaves in its wake.
Team owner Daniel Snyder has said repeatedly he will not change the name.
Last October, even President Obama weighed in, telling the Associated Press that if he owned the team, he would change the name.
Native Americans feel pretty strongly about it, and I don't know whether our attachment to a particular name should override the real legitimate concerns that people have about these things. But, I don't have a stake in this in the sense that I'm not a part owner of any football team.
The team got its name nearly 80 years ago when it played in Boston, Massachusetts.
But in recent years, the name Redskin has come to be seen as offensive by Native Americans.
The trademark was revoked in a previous case, but a U.S. court overturned that ruling for lack of evidence.
During the recent NBA Finals, one group even sponsored an ad calling for the name to be changed.
Seminole, Seneca, Mohawk. Mills, Will Rogers, Geronimo, unyielding, strong, indomitable. Native Americans call themselves many things. The one thing they don't.
To get some reaction to this news, we went to the U.S. American Indian Museum here in Washington.
I'm mixed on it. I want to be respectful to the Native Americans, but it's also a tradition that's been out there for 75 years, so I am mixed on it. So.
Yeah, because, well, it's not like they're doing something negative. They're Redskins and they're hardworking football players. It's not like they're out there doing bad things. I'm torn. Because they're not doing anything disrespectful. They're hardworking men, and they make a lot of money, and they're famous, and none of those things are really bad as long as they're used appropriately. So I'm torn, too. So, yeah, I'm Choctaw on my mother's side.
I guess, to me, it doesn't really make a whole lot of difference because we are not what, you know, everybody else says we are. We are who we are within ourselves. and who we believe ourselves to be.
I think it's a wonderful sign, and I think a number of the legislators and other people of goodwill around the country are starting to see that this is the right thing to do, that we do need to move on to something else, and that we need to have a better name for the Washington sports team.
Those were the voices of Jim and Mary Furnish of Lexington, Kentucky, Myra Archuleta of Arizona, and Phil Tajitsu Nash. Mary Furnish and Myra Archuleta are Native Americans. Phil Nash has worked with indigenous people in South America.
The Redskins' patent attorney issued a statement last week saying that the team is confident the case will be overturned on appeal. So what do you think? Do you think the Washington team should change its name?
Let us know your thoughts by logging on to our Facebook page, VOA Asia.
And follow us on Twitter, at Now VOA Show.
Manny, what's your favorite movie out right now?
David, it would have to be the X-Men Days of Future Past.
Because of Wolverine, huh?
Because of Wolverine.
Okay. Now, have you noticed, though, that movies aimed at young people like The Hunger Games or Divergent or Ender's Game, they're more violent than, you know, younger people's movies just a few years ago?
Yes, I have. Violent sells. I mean, even on TV, if you notice, it's getting more violent as well.
Yeah, but there's a new movie out called Earth to Echo that harkens more to Oscar winner Steven Spielberg's film E.T.
From Los Angeles, Elizabeth Lee found that this film is more family-friendly than recent darker films.
This is where the map says to go.
There's something in there.
Audiences will see action, adventure, suspense, and even an alien in the movie Earth to Echo. But what they won't see is violence. Ella Walstead plays Emma in the movie.
You'll never see much fighting, hand-to-hand combat. There's one scene, but like, yeah, you know, there's not...
He starts bleeding.
There aren't like tank tracks. There aren't like guns or whatnot.
Earth to Echo is a story about a group of friends who find a strange message on their phone. They experience a life-changing adventure as together they discover who sent that message and why. Director Dave Green wanted to make a movie similar to the ones he grew up watching.
I was making the movie for myself and the kid in me. So hopefully we've made a movie that appeals to a 31-year-old just as it would to a 12 or 13-year-old or anyone in the family.
In an interview with the film's other stars, Walstead says there are very few non-animated movies these days that appeal to all ages.
It's a lost genre. You know, you see a lot of 80s movies and it's constantly compared to E.T. And it's similar in the sense that there's an alien, but at the same time, it has a bit of an edge just because of all the modern technology that's incorporated in it.
Earth to Echo incorporates social media and is told from the point of view of the characters, including Tuck, played by actor Brian Astro Bradley, who experiences events through a video camera.
It's very today. You know, it's very today. Like, you had family movies that were either animated or, you know, it's not very relatable in real life, but this is relatable. Everybody films. You got Instagram, Vine, and technology is very relevant in the movie.
Dave Green says there is a reason why family-friendly movies are considered a lost genre.
There has been a shift in tone in recent years to present movies as darker.
I think they've gotten darker because when the movie comes out that's a little bit darker for kids, the other studios see what's happening and they tend to emulate what they've done. They'll
Adam Feinsilver, who attended the premiere with his children, says there is a market for lighthearted movies the whole family can enjoy.
I think the problem that producers have is they're trying to bring something to the studios that the studios will greenlight, and the studios don't necessarily want to go with what kids are going to like. They're going to go with what's done well over the last few years.
Make you home, all right?
Parents such as Feinsilver say they don't necessarily need movies that are darker, just ones that have good writing and a good plot. Elizabeth Lee for VOA News, Los Angeles.
Echo, we need your help.
So what do you think? Is this film a welcome break from more violent content, or is that not being realistic?
Let us know your opinion by logging on to our Facebook page, VOA Asia.
And be sure to follow us on Twitter, at Now VOA Show.
Thanks for joining us for this Monday edition of Now.
If you want to hear our program again, you can log on to our website, www.vonews.com/now.
And we're also on iTunes.
If you want to comment on our show or have any questions, you can visit our Facebook page, VOA Asia.
And remember to send us your World Cup tournament picks. We'll be reading your predictions as the tournament goes along.
And if you want to email us, our address is voaasia@voanews.com.
Patrice Martin produces our program.
The managing editor of VOA English is Diane Gao.
Until tomorrow, I'm David Berg.
And I'm Manny Eck.
Join us again for another edition of Now.